Blog Talk Radio.
The topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4CY Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4CY Radio or its employees or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4CY Radio.
Is January Jones. She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson show. She is an author, and she wrote Thou Shall Not Wine, the 11th commandment that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware. Because you are entering the no-whining world of January Jones.
Hello, everyone. I hope you're having a wonderful day, and I'd like to welcome you to our podcast today. As you know, my new brand is the Glitter Granny, and I'm trying to wear a different hat color every week. We all wear different hats in our lives for all the different roles we play. Also, I love wearing the hats because now I don't have to fuss with my hair. As you know from the podcast, my mantra is to ask good questions and hopefully we will get some very good answers. Now for my listeners, let me ask you a question. Have you ever thought about what is going on with the royal family? Well, these days, I think we all are thinking about it because guess what? That's all we are hearing about. It's a sad family saga. And from my experience, most people have an opinion on this one way or the other. Do you have an opinion? Tell me, who do you think is the villain? And who do you think is the hero? Are you ready to hear from one person? She is a psychiatrist with her take on this entire mess. Tell me, do you think there is any tea left to spill? Well, I'm sure there is. Would you like an expert's opinion on whether this sibling disaster can be mended and how they can do that? Also, on a side note, have you ever heard of a wonderful book called Bad Girls, Why Men Love Them, and How Good Girls Can Learn Their Secrets? We're going to hear about that later today. If you can answer yes or maybe to any of the questions I've asked today, then you are in the right place. And I'd like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stuff. So now it's time. Go get some wine, get some cheese, get some crackers, and join us in the No Wine Zone. Let me tell you a little bit about my guest today. I am so excited to have her on the show. This is her first visit with us, and she will be sharing her opinions about this royal feud. She's a Beverly Hills psychiatrist, and she can discuss what's gone wrong and who's to blame and why. I'd like to welcome to the show Carol Lieberman. Hello, Carol. How are you doing?
Hi there. Thank you.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you with us. I've been looking forward to this show. I'm sure with you being an expert on the royal family, you've been a busy gal these days, haven't you?
Yes. There is certainly a lot to analyze amongst the royal family, especially, of course, lately with Harry and Meghan's interview with Oprah, and then their Netflix series, and then Harry's book, Spare. I haven't quite finished his book, but I've watched all the other things, and there is, it's a lot.
Yes.
let me tell you why all of this interests me. I mean, it interests all of us because it's one of the things, it's like a fairy tale gone wrong. You know, we used to read when we were kids. Mm-hmm. Our parents used to read us fairy tales about princesses and princes and queens and kings and all that. And that's part of why we are so fascinated, in addition to, of course, all of the things that they're up to that keep us intrigued. But my history, I have a lot of connections to England and to the royal family. First of all, I've met Prince Charles when he was in L.A.
Lovely.
I lived in London when I was studying at Anna Freud's clinic. And the clinic is still there. Hampstead Clinic for Psychoanalysis. Of course, she was Sigmund Freud's daughter, and I really had the amazing opportunity to study under her. This was right before she died. And I also did research at the Maudsley Hospital, a psychiatric hospital in London. And in addition to that, one of my books called Coping with Terrorism, Dreams Interrupted, was published by a London publisher for the 1 year anniversary of their 9/11, which was 7/7 in 2005. So the 1 year anniversary, my book came out and I went there and, you know, went to the funeral services and so on and helped people. And what else? And then, I mean, there are so many different connections. An interesting one, though, you mentioned the book, Bad Girls, Why Men Love Them and How Good Girls Can Learn Their Secrets. That book came out in right before Kate and William got engaged.
Oh, okay.
So that fits perfectly because it was the quintessential good girl who knew bad girl secrets to catch her prince. And in particular, I talk about a number of them, but in particular, the strongest one was when she wore the sexy dress. Do you know what I'm talking about? Remember, they went to college together.
And
fashion show, and she modeled, yes, the sexy dress.
Wow.
And she walked down the fashion show aisle, and William turned to his friend, and he said, wow, she's hot. Then she had been in the friend zone, but seeing her in this dress and, you know, all glamorous and so on, that made him all of a sudden see her differently. And one of the, you know, bad girl secrets, of course, is to dress in a way that necessarily where everything hangs out.
Mission accomplished.
glamorous and to be to wear some pieces that are different, conversation pieces and so on, and that would get a man's attention. So
it worked.
They got engaged at the beginning of 2011. They got engaged at the end of 2010, but then at the beginning of 2011, I heard that this dress was going to be auctioned off in London.
Okay.
And I thought, you know, I had been talking about her and so on in some interviews, and I thought, wow, I have to have this dress.
Sure.
Both for media, but also for speaking engagements, you know, to try to convince women, what are the bad girl secrets you need to use to catch your prince?
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to London.
Oh.
And the word on the street was that the dress was going to go for $16,000. That's not chicken feed, but at the same time, I thought it would be worth it. So I went to London, and the first day was where you get to look at all the items up for auction.
Mm-hmm.
And they not only had her dress, but they had Wallace Simpson items, her lingerie.
Right.
Penoirs and so on. And really beautiful. And once I got there, I realized, I heard, you know, from all the chatter, that Kate's dress was going to go for a lot more than $16,000. In fact, that's what the bidding started at.
Oh, okay.
So I realized that, you know, I was not going to be able to pay some ridiculous amount. And so I bid on Wallace Simpson's Penwise and so on. Because she is the quintessential bad girl who used bad girl secrets to catch her man who abdicated the throne.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, long story short, I got to be friends with the woman who made the dress that Kate wore. What they did for the fashion show was they had students who were in a fashion show, in a fashion institute in London, send clothes that they made to the college.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who were modeling, the girls who were modeling, got to pick what they wanted to wear. And this was actually supposed to be a skirt that Kate wore as a dress.
Okay.
A flip underneath, because you could see through, you know, the there was a top and there was a bottom band. And then in the middle, there was this sort of blackish netting. That underwear underneath. So, and she's beautiful anyway. So, so it really showed her off.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had gotten to be friends with the woman who made the dress for Kate. And at the end, by the end of it, so it was a 2-day thing. And by the end of it, it ended up, the funny story, this part of the story is, so they started the bidding at $16,000. And the woman who had, who was running the auction, she started in the front row, and first person bid 16,000, then it went on and on and on. And by the time, and then I had been talking to her, calling all the time, emailing her, before I went there. And, but after it got to 65,000, she at me in the back, so Carol, you know, because she knew I came to London to be, and I had been talking to tons of media the first day. You know, people wanted to know, what's the girl from California coming here for this auction? And so, I got to tell my story in the book and the bad girl secrets and all this. And so there was the world's media was in the back of this room. So now the woman, the owner of the auction, points to me at 65,000 and said, you know, to let me bid. And I had to bid. I told all these people that I came here to bid. And needless to say, that would have been very difficult to come up with that amount of money for a dress. But anyhow, so I raised my little
what pressure.
And I, you know, said yes. And thank goodness, people bid after me. And in fact, it went for about $125,000.
Oh, wow.
My dress, and sure enough, other people did. So that's that story. And actually, you know, so then as it turned out, there was an exhibit in LA on the Queen Mary, mainly of Princess Diana clothes and so on. Kinds of things. And so this woman who was running it, the payment for the entrance fee goes to help a charity for breast cancer.
Oh, okay.
So the woman who was running it knew that I was going to London to get this dress.
Mm-hmm.
And, I left out something. So obviously I got to be friends with the woman who made the dress, and I convinced her to make a limited edition of copies of the dress.
Wow, brilliant.
And so I bought the first 100. I think there were 500 altogether, but I am the American ambassador. Because this is the only place you can get it in America is from me.
Oh, my God. That is just a fabulous story to start our podcast out. But right now, we're going to take a break and hear about a book I wrote a few years back.
Lately, there's a whining epidemic in our world. People are even whining about whining. Are you sick and tired of listening to everyone whining all the time? So was January Jones, the author of Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th commandment that reached number one at Amazon.com. Ms. Jones based her book on a survey of the top 10 things that people whine about at all ages and all stages of life. January is a success coach that can tell you how to help others. When you buy Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th commandment, you'll find out what people whine about and how to stop them from whining. This is the perfect gift book to give or get for any occasion. Thou Shall Not Wine was voted the best gift to be given anonymously for those special people in your life. Ms. Jones is an internationally known author in the style of Irma Bombeck, specializing in housewife humor, with her book being published in Korea and China. You can find Thou Shall Not Wine at Amazon.com.
Welcome back with my wonderful, entertaining guest, Carol Lieberman. Carol, before we go on with the podcast, could you share with our listeners your information, how they can go to your website, maybe how they can buy one of these dresses? We'd love to hear you at that.
Well, they could go to badgirlsbook.com, okay. And there is the dress as well as the book. Okay. Also, one of my websites is drcarole.com, which is drcarole.com. But I want to mention something about your book. You should send that book to the biggest whiner in the world right now, which is Prince Harry.
Oh, that's brilliant.
In fact, he's been called the whining prince, you know? So yes, he needs your book.
That's on my to-do list for sure. Talking about Prince Harry, I just finished reading the book because I knew we were doing this interview, and it was what a tell-all, what a cleansing. I mean, what this man has shared with the world is unbelievable. Don't you agree?
Oh, yes. You know, I haven't finished the book. I actually was using it the other day. I do a podcast called The Terrorist Therapist Show. And I picked out the parts that had to do with him putting himself and the family and the America and the Great Britain in grave danger. You know what I'm talking about. He wrote about what his two tours representing England in the war in Afghanistan. Yeah. And, you know, and I commend him for that. I mean, that was like the best thing that he has done in his life, you know, compared to where he is now. He started out, you know, really with a good heart and he put himself in danger, in serious danger. In fact, the Afghans were aiming for him the first tour. They pulled him back after his first tour because it was not only he who was in danger, but it was also the people in his group, in his troop, whatever they call it. Because, you know, the Taliban wanted to get Prince Harry. And so whoever was around him was in grave danger. Okay. Right. But then he went back and, but they gave him a different kind of position. And anyhow, so he really did good things. However, in his book, he boasts about this. He boasts in particular about his killing of 25 Taliban. He was an Apache pilot and his second tour. And as such, he killed these Taliban. So he bragged about it. And before the book came out, which was on January 10th, but before then, as you probably know, lots of it was leaked. And the Taliban got to read the leaks, you know, online and so on. And they already started telling their members, the other Taliban people and other terrorists about how we have to get Prince Harry for this. And not only Prince Harry and his family in California, but of course the royal family and England, Great Britain, America, you know, he has put all of us in danger because the way that he talked about, he was boasting, and also he talked about that he was able to kill them because he imagined them as chess pieces. Mm-hmm. And needless to say, the Taliban wasn't very happy about that. So he, you know, it's fine and good. Not really fine and good, but, you know, he tells all these other things. I was going to say it's fine and good to whine about all these, his mother and his, well, he didn't whine about his mother, about his father and his brother and all that. I mean, that was really why he wrote the book. He's so jealous of his brother. That's why he calls it spare, because the spare part, you know, he wasn't going to be king. His brother was. And so, you know, he always felt like the lesser one. He was just given birth because to have spare parts for William. So anyhow, of course, he's very resentful of that and very jealous and that he's not going to be king and all of that. So, and his father, he hates his father because, you know, as all little boys do, he was 12 when his mother died, but his father was having an affair with Camilla from before he married Diana to throughout the marriage with Diana. So, of course, you know, he resents his father for that. So those were the two main reasons. But also the stress that he and Meghan, he tells a story when his mother died when he was 12, mm-hmm. he was painful, of course, and he thought to himself that she wasn't really dead. And until he was 23, he believed that she was still alive and that she was going to call for him someday. Mm-hmm. And Meghan took advantage of this. And she played him like a violin. In a sense, she pretended to be, or he saw him. She put herself in a way in his life that he saw her as Diana coming back to get me. And she manipulated him, and she has used him, and for her own, of course, to be a princess, but yes. also for her own aims, her own political aims in America. She dreams of being president and so on. And so she wanted to use the race card. She wanted she and William to talk about how England was so terrible to her because she's biracial. I mean, they weren't. It wasn't because she was biracial. It was because she was a malignant narcissist. So that was part of the book and part, well, their Oprah interview, it started, the Netflix documentary and the book. And of course, the interesting thing is that on the interview with Anderson Cooper, yes. Harry said, did you watch that?
Yes,
Harry,
I did.
Harry said, I never said that the royal family was racist, which is not true. You know, he forgot that he did say that and Meghan said that. And but after that, Meghan, you know, that certainly would have gotten Meghan really angry because that is the point, according to her. Those are the people who she wants to get behind her in whatever political office she runs for. So she was outraged. And since then, there has been neither hide nor hair of her in the media. Usually she's out putting her face everywhere, and there hasn't been.
Yeah, she has. Yeah, she's been under the radar, so to speak. And, you know, I'm watching this whole thing unfold. It's just been fascinating. And I was thinking about it the other day. If I were their PR person, I would have said after the Oprah interview would have been a very, very good time to put this memoir on pause.
Yes.
And it should have been put to the back, and they should have let Charles go forth with his court. I mean, this country is still healing from losing a queen.
Yes. Yes.
So they're all in shell shock over there about they probably thought she'd never die. And it seemed like she wouldn't, but they should have put this book in the background and let things just settle down. Don't you agree?
Yes. And, you know, there was some report that Harry tried to do that and that the publisher wouldn't let him. I don't know how much I believe that.
Yeah.
But yes. And, you know, I was telling you before we started about how, I mean, I've been taught actually, I was devastated when the Queen died and when Prince Philip died, for that matter. Mm-hmm. And so when she died, I was doing a lot of talking about in the media about how Meghan and Harry contributed to her death. And actually, if you look at it, Prince Philip died 1 month after their Oprah interview. Okay. And now the Queen died right before the Netflix and before the book. She didn't want to be around when those came out. And, you know, I would say, what?
I said she had to exit left.
Yes, right. And and I'm not saying, you know, that they shot her or anything like that, but it is, I mean, I'm a doctor, a medical doctor. It is known, it has long been known that stress kills people and that people can die of a broken heart. And certainly both of them were stressed and had broken hearts. So I was talking about this on a show in England, the GB Network.
Yeah.
I posted it on my Twitter and so on. I was talking about, you know, all about Meghan and Harry, and particularly about how they killed the Queen. And there was this gasp. And then I explained about the stress and the broken heart and all that. And I put it on Twitter, and I started, you know, either people love them or hate them. Yeah. Love or hate Meghan in particular. And so lots of people watch this in life and on my Twitter feed. And I started getting from the people who love Meghan, I started getting all these nasty responses to my tweet. And I realized, you know, I really have to block these people, because as soon as they would get on, there would be other people who would like it, or who would retweet it.
Yeah.
And so I was staying up in the middle of the night like whack-a-mole trying to get rid of these things. People could retweet them. But I haven't stopped speaking my mind because I really think that she is a malignant narcissist, and I feel really bad for Harry. I'm feeling a little less bad since yes, she did manipulate him. She was a bad girl. Definitely she was a bad girl. But she became the speaker, the mouthpiece for all these things, these resentments that Harry has been holding in, you know, the anger towards his father for having this affair and then for marrying. They didn't want Charles to marry Camilla. And of course that broke his mother's heart, you know, his father did. And I think that was wrong. I feel sorry for Diana. Diana was wonderful. And also his brother, the resentment he had towards his brother, So marrying Meghan, that allowed him to speak, you know, through her and her, having her as his wife, like, gave him the courage to write about these things. And, you know, I don't know if you saw this, but just recently she came out with, she was quoted in something saying that she tried gently to dissuade Harry from some of the things he wrote. Oh, my. Lady, no way. You just wanted all this money. If Harry hadn't written, you know, some really outrageous things, it wouldn't have made as much money.
Carol, we're going to take a break right now talking about outrageous things, and we're going to hear about my book that I've written about the Kennedys, and all three of my books are now coming out in Audible. Hard to believe it's been 60 years since this horrific assassination, and people are still asking who killed Kennedy.
Let me ask you a question. Are you still wondering who killed Kennedy? Over 50 years later, the assassination is still a mystery. It is unfinished business for our country. Now, get ready for a theory that you've never heard before, but will make more sense than any other conspiracy theory that you've ever heard in the past. January Jones speaks the unspeakable in her book, Jackie, Ari, and Jack, The Tragic Love Triangle, connecting Jackie and Aristotle Onassis romantically prior to JFK's assassination. Did you know that Ari was Jackie's guest in the White House during the JFK funeral? He was the only non-family member who was invited by Jackie to stay there during the funeral. Aristotle Onassis was one of the wealthiest men in the world, with the means, the motive, and the money to order an assassination that was the perfect crime of the last century. Ari needed class, and Jackie needed cash. They were perfect for each other. Now, what is Camelot? It is but another tragic love triangle. Jackie, Ari, and Jack is available at JanuaryJones.com, Amazon.com, and Audiobooks.com, read by Ms. Jones.
Welcome back with my guest, and we're talking about another tragic event, and it's the royal feud, and it's just been such amazing coverage. Everyone in the world is talking about it. You know, my question is why they're speculating whether Harry will be invited to the coronation. And my thought is, why and would you do that? Why would you invite them? It'll be a total distraction. And I mean, this is a time when this country needs to heal. They need to get behind their new king. They need to have a peace, unity. Don't you agree?
Oh, yes. I think it would be a disaster to invite them because they just use these opportunities, just like they did when the queen was alive. You know, they were taking all these photos and video and all that behind her back, you know, while they came and pretended to be respectful. And really, they were just doing it for themselves and also to get more attention on themselves. You know, even the, it was really bad. I didn't like that they were at her funeral, for that matter, because it was so hypocritical. I mean, Harry loved his grandmother. You know, and in fact, in the Netflix documentary, there's a scene where, which is, you know, and this has been cited by a lot of people. It's the one scene that you remember. The rest of it is a demo tape from Meghan. You know, did you think that the next 6 hours of demo tape, really, here I am in this position, here I am here, and look at me here, or selfies, a selfie demo tape. It was outrageous.
You know, for some people who say they want privacy,
yes,
and they want security, it was so, the docuseries was so transparently planned. Some of the things that were used, these were things that were done, video that were, someone had a bigger picture in mind, let's put it that way.
Absolutely.
It was a very transparent propaganda, in my opinion.
Yes. I mean, how did they, you know, back, it was like the first date. Now, who was taking video of them on the first date? I mean, what? It's ridiculous. She had this planned really from the time that she asked her friend to introduce her. But it would not be good for them to be at the coronation, because not only would they, of course, take attention away from the people who deserve the attention, but they, anything that the, you know, that the royal family says to them will be in the next book or the next video.
I know.
You can't trust that anything that you say to them won't be broadcast in some way.
Absolutely. You know, before we go, what's your take on the situation with Camilla? Now, of course, she was the third person, and so many people didn't like her because they were so sympathetic to Diana, as was I. And what's your take on the situation? Because he makes some really brutal accusations about her.
Yes, the evil stepmother.
Yes.
Well, I wasn't too thrilled with her myself because I thought that was, I mean, Diana was so, it was the question everybody asked, right? How could he prefer Camilla to Diana? You know, particularly to go to bed with Camilla instead of Diana. And the answer to that question is, it's an Oedipal fixation in that Camilla reminded him of his mother.
Oh, the horse.
Basically having sex with his mother, and that's why he was attracted to her. Diana was too threatening, you know, in a sense that she was too fabulous, you know.
I thought she got too much attention.
Yes, that too. Yes, absolutely. And when Meghan went over there, she thought that she was going to be Diana. I mean, not only did she pretend to be Diana to get Harry, but I think she was hoping, you know, here she's this Hollywood B-level actress. But anyway, she was hoping to get all the attention. And you know what I think, and no one is saying this, but I have been looking at pictures and videos and so on.
Mm-hmm.
What are these glances that Meghan question to William. I think that she might have hoped that William would prefer her to Kate.
Oh,
and
yes.
She would get to be not just a princess, but a queen.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. I that never crossed my mind.
She, in some pictures, she is looking at him in this way. You can kind of see her brain ticking.
You know, that goes way back many years ago. I remember a picture of Grace Kelly looking at John Kennedy with that kind of a look.
A hungry look.
Replacing Kate would be just nearly impossible, because in my opinion,
yes.
Kate, they went to wherever they clone future queens.
Yes.
And they put their order in and they were presented with Kate, because I think she is fabulous. I think her mom has just done a great job helping her through all this. And the children, she would be a very difficult person. And, you know, she manages somehow to stand behind William, even though she's fabulous.
Yes, that's true. That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to forget to mention something. We were talking about Kate and her dress and all that a little while ago, and I was mentioning that it was, I don't know that I finished the story, but that this dress, as well as Wallace Simpson's underwear, her pants and so on, were on the Queen Mary in that exhibit. The exhibit is now in Las Vegas. So yes, people can go see, it's the princess, called the Princess Diana exhibit. And it's a fabulous exhibit.
And where is it at in Vegas?
It's in one of the, I should know this. It's in one of the malls, but I mean, if you just Google it, Princess Diana exhibit in Vegas.
Fascinating.
It's really a beautiful museum quality exhibit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the little dress that went for $65,000, is that in the exhibit?
You mean the $125,000.
$125,000.
Yeah. Sorry. I would have gone for $65,000 if I would have. The real dress itself is not there.
Okay.
The limited edition copy by the ambassador, thanks to the American ambassador. Okay. As in my book, Bad Girls, Why Men Love Them and How Good Girls Can Learn Their Secrets. So, but it's not about me. There are also things, there's part of the exhibit, a small part that's Harry and Meghan, but there are, you know, there's the Queen, all the royal family really are well represented.
Okay, we're going to take a break and hear about two other books that I've written. But while we're gone, let's think about, when we come back, what kind of advice, Catherine, would you give the royal family for kind of getting this whole thing put together again? We'll be right back.
Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable? Someone who has touched your heart and soul? People who have faced difficult problems? People who have struggled to find solutions. People who fearlessly shared their stories. People who have not only informed you, but inspired you. People who have priceless personalities. I have been fortunate to host an internet radio talk show called January Jones Sharing Success Stories. And it has been my privilege to interview hundreds of guests. My guests have shared their stories, their struggles, their secrets, and their successes in their own words. In this book, we're talking about people dealing with problems such as incest, molestation, runaway kids, child abuse, drug abuse, polygamy, unemployment, scandal, and starting over. Then there are my guests dealing with difficult physical struggles such as blindness, cancer, and birth defects that are beyond traumatic. My guests have all been exciting, eclectic, and energizing. They have amazed, amused, and even astonished me. I have adored getting to meet them, and I adore sharing them with you.
Attention all listeners. Priceless Personalities, Success Stories Shared by January Jones, Volume 2 is now available at Amazon.com in paperback and Kindle editions. You'll be able to meet 10 amazing people who will be sharing their own personal stories with all their struggles, successes, and solutions sprinkled with lots of humor and hope. Priceless Personalities features a teenager who becomes one of the famous Supremes from Motown, a nurse who as a humorist helps people to heal, an inspiring laughter yoga instructor, a mother dealing with the loss of a child, an incredible motivational speaker, a woman who married 5 times, a gifted paranormal nurse, a wise economist, a funny female humorist, along with an older man sharing his sweet childhood in the Deep South. January's guests are all amazing and amusing. You will never forget meeting them. Go to Amazon.com for your own priceless experience.
Welcome back with another priceless personality guest on our show, Carol Lieberman. Carol, what advice would you give King Charles and Queen Consort Camilla about putting this back together and trying to get back, trying to help the country heal?
So very, well, what they are doing, I was going to say, this is a very difficult problem because really what's happening now is that Harry is holding them hostage. You know, he's telling them, if you don't apologize to my wife, apologize for what? I have, he said he's written 400 pages. He has 400 more pages ready to go into another book, scathing book. If they don't apologize to his wife. So I think they've been doing a wonderful job so far. You know, They say that they haven't, I'm sure they listened to the Oprah interview, but they say they haven't watched Netflix or read his book. I think at least some of them have, because it's, you know, you want to know, what do you say about me? But I think what they've been doing, basically, you know, the worst thing, they've been doing the worst thing you can do to them, which is to ignore them. You know, they are both such attention seekers.
Okay.
If you ignore them, that's how you can cause them the most pain. So they have been ignoring them, you know, except for minor comments, you know, here and there. But basically, they've been mostly ignoring them.
They're trying to take the high road. And as we know, their motto's always been don't complain, don't explain.
Right.
This is a tough one to not complain about.
What they're doing is, that they're spending their time, instead of talking about Meghan and Harry, going out in the country and doing all kinds of work to help people, you know, visiting schools and visiting hospitals and, you know, visiting community meetings and so on, doing things for their country. And is saying it all.
Yeah, those are the things that are good, they're good at. And also, you know, we were speaking about Meghan taking a low profile these days. It appears to me also that Camilla is doing
really?
That.
You a good alternative?
Her taking a lower profile, and we're seeing more about William and Kate doing things.
Yes, although Camilla used to really be, you know, when everybody didn't like her or angry because of they liked Diana more, she really had a low profile. She's been coming out a little more, in terms of these good works. And, you know, I was saying before that I really didn't like her because I sided with Diana and all that. And, the affair wasn't great to do. It was hurtful to Diana. But she has been, you know, especially since they got married, she has been trying to not just have the title, but to actually use the title to do good work.
Now, I noticed the other day that Charles had donated from one of his properties a large sum of money, and instead of taking it for the royal income, he donated it to help people in the country who are struggling. And having a hard time. And I think that is a brilliant thing for him to do. And doing more of that will help.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How could they have avoided this? How could they have gotten around it? What would they have had to do to avoid Mexico?
You're not interested in walking, are you?
Well, you know.
Or was it inevitable?
I mean, no, I don't think it was inevitable. I mean, they could have just stayed there. You know, Megan was complaining. First of all, you know, like when she went on tour, she made a comment that the media picked up on, you know, before Megxit.
Mm-hmm.
That I should be paid for this. Did you see that? It was in the press. I should be paid for this. Like she was doing so much work by, you know, going on tour and so on to these different countries and trying to be helpful and all of that. But she, because it was hard work. So she should be paid for that. I mean, the Queen did a lot harder work, as did Diana, as did, you know, and yet she thinks she should be paid for it. So
yeah. Well, they got quite a paycheck from Netflix. And, I mean, as far as
$100, yes,
$100 million. That's definitely getting paid for. Okay.
The right thing, which was to stay in the country and to do the job of the royals, which is to, you know, be helpful in all these different ways. To visit people in the hospital, veterans, and, you know, all of the different things that Diana did and that all of the royal family did. You know, she wanted Megxit because she was disappointed that she didn't get to be a star. She didn't get to be bigger than Catherine, first of all. You know, that was number one thing that she thought she was at least going to be. The media would pay more attention to her than Kate and be positive about her. And then, of course, you know, her long-term plan, I think she realized she wasn't going to get William. He saw through her. And so there was nothing more to be done there, you know, other than to exploit the royal family by going home and doing all these things that they've done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't see them having any reconciliation in the future, do you?
I think if Harry and Meghan get divorced, that's one way, you know, he will come from and say, you know, it'll shock him back into reality.
Yeah.
That's one way. And, you know, other than that, I mean, he's so confused now. He really, you know, he's so mixed up in what really happened and what story is true. You know, Meghan has twisted his mind around and also his own resentments and so on. And like, that's how he ended up saying that thing on Anderson Cooper that, oh, we didn't say that the royal family is racist, which was, of course they did. That's what they've been saying and everything. So he just got confused because his head is all twisted around. He did so much promotion for the book. And he was just getting all, you know, mixed up with everything.
Yeah, because, you know, he's saying on one hand they're leaking this information to the tabloids, and then on the other hand he's saying we didn't say they were racist. Well, guess what, leaking to the tabloids is a racist thing to do.
Well, I mean, yes, he was totally hypocritical saying that he didn't want things to leak, and all they've been doing is courting the media. So yes.
Oh yeah. It's such a sad tragedy, and, you know, you hate to see it, and especially, and I agree with you, I'm sure the Queen just said, I'm out of here. I'm sure she just said, uh-oh, this is more than I signed on for. Gosh, it's been fun talking to you, and I hope you'll come back, because I'd like to talk more about bad girls and bad boys. That would be wonderful. You know, before I end every show, Carol, I always ask my guests a question. If you could have dinner alone with anyone, living or dead, well, besides me, who would you choose to have dinner with?
I know that this, let's see, do I tell you the non-controversial answer or the controversial?
I want the controversial, of course.
Well, the non-controversial one is Kate. You know, I want to, when I die, I want to come back as Kate. But the controversial one is Trump, because when he gets elected president again, people are going to think that I'm not in touch with reality. Some people are going to think that. When he gets elected president again, I want to be able to help him with a lot of things. You know, I'm the terrorist therapist. I can help with that. Obviously, with the psyche of America, I can help with that. So I would like to have dinner with him.
Wow, that is quite an amazing answer. I have to tell you, I've asked all of my guests throughout this last year that question, and you are certainly the first one to come up with that answer. And I'm sure it's going to be as controversial as what you said earlier. I think that, good job. Well done, dear. I'd like to thank you so much for being on the show. And I hope everyone will support Carol and go to her website and buy her books. Next Tuesday, live at 2 p.m., I'll be back here wearing another hat. Now my 79-year-old thought for the day, it's better to grow old with a sense of humor than to grow old without any sense at all. So there you go. Signing off from the Glitter Granny and Carol Lieberman, thank you for entering the No Wine Zone with us today. Share our stories with everyone you know. And remember, you need to, right now, this is for Harry, stop whining, start smiling, and if that doesn't work, then you can start eating chocolate, lots and lots of chocolate. Take care and stay safe until we meet again. Thank you.
We want to thank you for listening to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Always remember Ms. Jones' personal mantra, if you can think it, you can do it. That's what all of our guests have done with their lives, and so can you. You are the ultimate success coach in your own life. All you need to do will be to start sharing your own story with your family and friends. We hope that our guest stories will encourage you to explore an equation in your future that will combine your creativity, plus connecting with others will enable you to be successful too. Always remember, your passion plus your purpose will equal prosperity as you explore the wonderful world of January Jones.
Yeah.
No.
What, Teddy? Oh, yeah, I'm going to use Dad's long charger for my... Oh, you were out in the yard.
Yeah.
I didn't know how many he went out. I didn't know. Yeah. Yeah.
You still have an old phone then? Got the 14 or the 14 or 13. You don't have the 15 yet.
No, this is.
Oh, you were just charging
it.
Oh, okay.
There, yeah.
Okay, I thought you were looking to charge over there.